some people think I'm the head of the Illuminati conspiracy.
Robert Anton Wilson, please.
Has the government fallen yet? I haven't had a chance to... I haven't had a chance to catch up with the telly today. I've been too busy. You realize this is a historical occasion. It's not only the day after the 23rd, but if the government falls, it'll be the first government in history to fall because somebody wouldn't flirt with the prime minister. That's Mrs. Heseltine's story. She claims the whole problem started because her husband wouldn't flirt with Maggie Thatcher. Imagine that, bringing down a whole government. I wouldn't know how to go about flirting with Maggie Thatcher myself. She intimidates me. As you can tell from my accent, I come from New York. And people from New York, we all have this attitude that people with an accent like Maggie Thatcher are very intimidating to us. Americans tend to believe that Bertrand Russell is the greatest philosopher of the 20th century. And maybe he was. I admire him. I think, though, it's partly because of the accent he had. I think if Ludwig Wittgenstein came over to the United States and appeared on television, everybody would think, "Shut up, you dumb kraut, what do you know?" But an accent like Bertrand Russell or Maggie Thatcher is very intimidating to us Americans. So I wouldn't know how to go about flirting with Maggie Thatcher. So I sympathize with Heseltine. I mean, to me, it's sort of like flirting with a camel. I wouldn't know how to do it. If any of you are into flirting with camels, you might be happy to know the Ayatollah Khomeini has announced that a woman cannot divorce her husband if he sodomizes camels regularly. Please, respect for religion. He's a holy man. He's one of the... He's the world's leading authority on the Quran. And according to the Ayatollah, God does not approve of divorce. And so Iranian women, even if their husband goes out once a week and buggers the camel, they can't get a divorce. I mean, think these poor women might catch something even worse than AIDS. You know, but no divorce. God is against it. However, true believers cannot eat the flesh of that camel if it's subsequently butchered. I'm not putting you on. These are all teachings of the Ayatollah. He's very popular in the United States these days in surrealist circles. At first, everybody was afraid of the Ayatollah. Then they were angry at him. Now they decided to laugh at him. So there's a book out, quotations from the Ayatollah Khomeini, commenting on the Quran. And he says very definitely, a woman cannot divorce her husband if he sodomizes camels. She can divorce him if he sodomizes her brother, though. And some people think the Ayatollah is a crazy old man who has delusions that he's in touch with God. But those people don't live in Iran. In Iran, everybody believes he's really getting direct communications from God, because those who don't believe that have been shot already. He may seem rather backward and short. He may seem like a male chauvinist pig, I suppose, in feminist jargon. But compare him with the Pope. The Pope says a woman can't divorce her husband even if he sodomizes camels every day and her brother twice a week. And some people think the Ayatollah is weird. Did you all get your Pope cards? I wanted to make sure that everybody who came here tonight... to express my appreciation that you'd come to hear me, I arranged for all of you to be made popes. This is a religious duty with me. I'm a very pious Discordian. Discordianism is the world's first true religion. All the other true religions have pretty much collapsed, but Discordianism is a true religion. It's based on the idea that every man, woman, and child on the planet should be a pope. And we have so far distributed over 5 million pope cards, and we're still at it. All loyal Discordians give out pope cards every chance they can. Every lecture I give, I manage to distribute pope cards to the whole audience. I'm thinking of starting doing it over the radio now. Recently, the Vatican announced that they're going to give indulgences over television. Did you hear about that? It's no longer necessary to go to a bishop to get an indulgence. A bishop will go on television and give an indulgence to everybody who's listening, which is marvelous technology and medieval superstition all in one bag. And it does raise theological questions, like if you didn't pay your TV license, is the indulgence valid? Or is it self-negating if your license fees aren't up to date? These are difficult questions. I admire people like the Pope and the Ayatollah and Andrea Dworshak, who know what's right for everybody, because I spend most of my time trying to figure out what's right for me. And people who know what's right for everybody really fill me with astonishment and awe. The Discordian Society, as some of you may know, is based on henotheism, which is a bit of a novelty in the modern world because we've all been conditioned by 2,000 years of monotheism. There are some pagans trying to revive polytheism. You must have heard of them. They're around England. Every year they get in the newspapers when they try to get into Stonehenge and the police won't let them in. Henotheism does not claim there's only one God, and it doesn't insist they all have to be treated equally. Henotheism says there's lots of them, but pick out the one you like best for yourself. And we Discordians picked out Eris, who is the... Hail Eris! Right on. She's the ancient Greek goddess of chaos, confusion, discord, bureaucracy, and international relations. The Discordian religion, as I said, is the only true religion. We can demonstrate that it's true with five proofs. The first proof is just look around and see how much chaos there is. Where did all this chaos come from? There's a lot of smart-aleck atheists around who say this chaos just happened. But I don't think all this chaos could just happen. Somebody had to put it here. Who could have done it? Well, the Greeks found out. God is a crazy woman. Eris. And then if you look around, what else do you find after chaos? You find discord. Everybody is arguing with their family every time they get together. Business companies, they spend all their time arguing about policy. You go into your bank, you get into an argument about the overdraft. So chaos, discord, she's the chick what done it all. And what comes after chaos and discord? Confusion. And if you weren't confused, what would you be doing here tonight? All of these things, it's on a scale. It moves upward. You start with chaos, and that leads to discord, and discord leads to confusion, and then the next step is bureaucracy. Bureaucracy is the fourth stage of chaos. And look at how much bureaucracy there is these days. You have to get a license to look at TV, for instance, as I mentioned earlier. You travel from one country to another, and you spend most of your time filling out forms and checking through customs regulations and so on. And the fifth stage of chaos is international relations. And that is the highest degree of chaos. Can you imagine how people would treat somebody who... If somebody on your street started acting toward the rest of the street the way governments act toward one another, you'd all call the police and have them carted off to the bin. And so international relations is the highest form of chaos. And therefore, since I've now given you five proofs that Eris is the one divinity that really explains the universe, I might as well admit that actually I'm an agnostic myself. I just think Eris is a convenient metaphor. But on the other hand, all there is metaphor anyway. Every word I speak is metaphor. You can't use language without using metaphor. We need one metaphor or another. And so this way we rope in the sentimental agnostics, you see. Okay, you don't have to believe in Eris literally. We don't claim there's some great big... goddess up there in the sky. That's just a metaphor, but you got to understand the meaning behind the metaphor. Then we use a few quotes from T.S. Eliot out of context, and we convince everybody that it makes perfect sense to worship Eris even if she doesn't exist. We've learned a lot from the Anglicans. I don't mean to put down the Church of England. I love it. It's, as Trollope said, it's the only church in the world that interferes neither with your politics nor your religion. Why the sacred number is 5 instead of 8? Well, I'm sorry, but we can't have heresy around here. It's heresy, and that's even worse than heresy. The proof of the importance of 5 is that you've got 5 fingers to begin with. All through the Second World War, Winston Churchill kept up morale with this, which is the Roman symbol for 5, although very few people realized it at the time. It's made up of 2 fingers up and 3 down, which shows the importance of the secret 23 current within the 5 symbol. You've got 5 toes as well as 5 fingers, and every problem on this planet, if you analyze it, has 5 aspects: chaos, discord, confusion, bureaucracy, and international relations. 5. And we've got 55 million other proofs, but I don't have time to run through them all tonight. The basic Discordians don't have dogmas, you understand. Other religions have dogmas. We just have catmas. This is a catma rather than a dogma. But it works out if you test it. This is very similar to the Copenhagen interpretation in quantum physics. The Copenhagen interpretation in quantum mechanics is that we can't describe the universe. We can only describe the models we make in trying to describe the universe. And the law of 5s is a basic statement of the same sort. Everything is related to the number 5. And if you just use enough ingenuity, you will relate everything to the number 5. And if you can't relate anything to the number 5, you're not using enough ingenuity. In that case, look up the Roman Catholic arguments as to transubstantiation. Transubstantiation is the doctrine that somebody who was ordained by a bishop who was ordained by a pope, and you're all popes now, remember, if anybody who's ordained by a bishop who's ordained by you can pronounce for words over a piece of bread and turn it into the body of a Jew who died 2,000 years ago. Now, if that can be proven, and it can be proven, if you don't believe it, get a Jesuit in here next week and he'll prove it to you. And then there's the doctrine of the withering away of the state on which the Soviet Union is based. The state is supposed to wither away within a month after the revolution, according to Karl Marx. Take a look at Soviet Russia. And yet they can prove the state is withering away. It's just taking a little longer than Marx thought it would. And with similar ingenuity, you will find everything is related to the number 5. I absolutely guarantee it. Would you repeat the question? That's right. That's why it cost a fiver to get in. Everything relates directly to the number 5. 5, 5, 5, 5. 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5. So later on, I encountered the founders of Discordianism, the two wisest men I have ever known, Ho Chi Zen, who subsequently went insane, and Malaclips the Younger, who now runs the computer department of the Bank of America. if you wonder why the world is getting a little bit weirder all the time, Ho Chi Zen and Malaclips the Younger were in a bowling alley in Yorba Linda, California, in 1959. Yorba Linda, that's where Richard Nixon grew up. It's a sacred city to Discordians, because Nixon was the most chaotic president we ever had. He embodied every Discordian quality possible. The Pentagon is a sacred shrine to Discordians because it has 5 sides and because it illustrates the Discordian law that the imposition of order always creates an acceleration of chaos. The Pentagon is the most bureaucratic and chaotic place in the world. It controls most of the world, and it spends all the rest of its time trying to figure out how it can control the rest of the world. So, Ho Chi Zen and Malaclips the Younger were at a bowling alley in Yorba Linda, where Richard Nixon grew up, and a chimpanzee came in. And the chimpanzee said, I have observed that you have often pondered the mysteries of the universe and tried to figure out the great plan behind it all. I have been sent to reveal to you there is no great plan behind it all. It's just sheer chaos. And this is how the Discordian movement began. The chimpanzee appointed Malaclips the Younger the Pope of the Discordian Society, and Ho Chi Zen said, I didn't see any talking chimpanzee. I think you were so stoned you were hallucinating. So he became the leader of the Protestant sect, and so Discordianism was discordant to begin with, thereby illustrating the law that chaos gives birth to confusion, which leads to discord. And then I came along, and they made me a pope, too, so we had three popes. And then, at that time, there was a chap in the United States named Kirby Hensley. Have you heard about him? Him over here? Kirby Hensley? He's the founder of the Universal Life Church. And he set out to make every man, woman, and child on the earth an ordained clergy person. I'm sorry, that's speciesist terminology. One must not say clergy person. It's very biased toward the higher mammals. Clergy entity is the word I was groping for. Kirby Hensley got his degree from a mail order theology school, and he's always insisted, he's interviewed frequently on American television, he's always insisted he's illiterate. He was illiterate when he got the degree, and he's still illiterate, and he's proud of it. And he got this revelation that being an ordained clergyman, it was his duty to make everybody else an ordained clergy entity. So he formed the Universal Life Church. And if you send them a simple letter, no money, he doesn't take any money for this whatsoever. It's totally free. Just send him a letter telling him you want to be a clergy person or a clergy entity, and you get back a certificate. You're ordained. You're a minister of the gospel, or at least you're a minister of a gospel. First, you got to find a gospel. You pick one that exists or create your own, but you're a minister of the Universal Life Church. And so we Discordians decided, well, if everybody's going to be a minister, let's raise the stakes and make everybody a pope. And that's how we started printing the pope cards. And we've had a lot of success. We've got a lot of popes now. We sent one to the anti-pope in France. You've all heard of the anti-pope in southern France. He claims the fellow in the Vatican is a fraud. We sent one to the guy in the Vatican who still thinks he's the only pope in the world. He doesn't know there are 5 million of us now. But we thought he should be a Discordian pope, too. And just yesterday, I was on a radio show, the day before yesterday, Radio 4 Midweek, and there was a Scotsman on there who manufactures bagpipes. He told me I should send a pope card to Ian Paisley. And that's, yeah. 1986 is only 24 days old, and still one great idea has come along already. As soon as I get back to Dublin, I'm going to send the pope card to Ian Paisley, make him a pope, too. Everybody should be a pope, especially the people who hate the pope, you know. The more popes, the better. So, of course, once we started making everybody into a pope, people had to decide what they were going to do after they were popes, so they started forming various different types of Discordian sects, which I'm all in favor of. I'm always in favor of sects. Wait a minute, that's S-E-C-T-S. We got one branch called the John Dillinger Died for You Society, which accepts John Dillinger as our risen savior. John Dillinger was shot by the foul agents of the infamous FBI, that insidious Freemasonic conspiracy which has controlled the United States for so long, outside the Biograph Theater on June 22nd, 1934. And yet there are pictures of a man in California today, alive, who looks exactly like Dillinger. This is in a book called Dillinger, Dead or Alive. As soon as we read that book, we founded the John Dillinger Died for You Society. He has risen!
Not.
is the very important topic that I really came here to discuss tonight. I was discussing Discordianism and Druidism and the John Dillinger Die for You Society and so on. Basically, the leading up to revealing the supreme secret of power, which is what everybody wants to know. But before we get to the supreme secret of power, we have got to discuss lepufology. Lepufology is the study of rabbits and UFOs. People do not think enough. You're laughing already. People do not think seriously enough about rabbits and UFOs. And yet, if you go through the literature of UFOs, you find the conjunction over and over again. J. Allen Hynek of the Center for UFO Studies in Evanston, Illinois, he reports a case, one of the best documented UFO landing cases ever. They found hundreds and hundreds of paralyzed rabbits all around the landing site. There's a farmer in Isola, Italy, who says a flying saucer came down, little dwarfs got out, they took all the rabbits out of his rabbit hutch, loaded them on the flying saucer, and took off again. Maybe the extraterrestrials are coming here to find the makings for rabbits, though. There's a family in Yorkshire who has repeatedly reported UFO sightings while they were rabbit hunting. Does anybody know who the first UFO abductee was? It was Bugs Bunny. In a 1952 cartoon called Hasty Hare, Bugs Bunny was kidnapped by a flying saucer. This was years before there were any reports of human beings being kidnapped by flying saucers. Everybody saw E.T. by now. How many people remember the opening shot of E.T.? It's a close-up of a rabbit. And then you see the extraterrestrials loading the minerals onto their flying saucer. You'll find the same thing in the 1952 thriller, It Came From Outer Space. When the spaceship crashes, the first shot you see is a rabbit running away. There was a report in Illinois of somebody who saw hundreds and hundreds of rabbits fleeing from one section of the woods, and then a UFO ascended from that part of the hills. And there are only two rulers of great nations in history who are connected with both the UFOs and rabbits. There's King Arthur and Jimmy Carter. And Monty Python and the Holy Grail. King Arthur sees the Holy Grail, and it's a UFO, remember? And a little bit later in the film, he's attacked by a killer rabbit. Remember? I don't know if I can get away with using Monty Python material on this record, but you remember that great line in the movie, that rodent has a vicious streak a mile wide? Well, that came out in 1976, and 3 years later, in 1979, another head of a great nation was attacked by a killer rabbit. That was Jimmy Carter, and he was a UFO witness, too. He saw a UFO several years before, and in 1979, he was on vacation in Plains, Georgia, when he was attacked by a killer rabbit. Do you remember that story? A lot of people made fun of him, which is not nice to make fun of the President of the United States. The demonstration that the surrealists have totally taken over is what happened to Jimmy Carter in 1979. There he is taking a vacation, trying to get away from the problems of how do you deal with the Ayatollah Khomeini? Carter was very hassled because the Ayatollah Khomeini was holding a lot of American hostages. And Carter is trying to deal with this man who thinks that a woman shouldn't divorce her husband, even if he sodomizes camels every day, and that he talks to God directly. How do you negotiate with a man like that? So Carter was taking a vacation. He thought, I'll get away from all that. And he went down to Plains, Georgia, and he was attacked by a killer rabbit. It may have been the Pooka from County Kerry, or it may have been Bunny Man from Cornwall, but it was one of these weird rabbits. Carter said, it was a killer rabbit. I was swinging for my life. He had to fight it off with a canoe paddle. And some people made fun of it and said, Hamilton Jordan isn't the only one in the White House sniffing cocaine. And Carter got very offended. He said it was a real rabbit, and it was dangerous. It was a gigantic, dangerous killer rabbit. And then he announced they had photographs of him fighting the rabbit off with the paddle. And one White House spokesman said, I have seen the photographs. The president was fighting for his life. So then the press demanded that they release the photographs, and suddenly, as always happens in the United States when you get too close to the secrets of power, down came the Iron Curtain, the lid slammed down, they said, we can't release the photographs. And the press said, why can't you release the photographs of the president fighting with the killer rabbit? And Rex Ingram, the press secretary at the time, said, there are certain facts about the president of the United States which must remain forever hidden. So we never got to see photographs of the killer rabbit. I don't know, maybe it was a CIA experiment. After all, maybe they, after the contaminated diving suit and the explosive fountain pen and the poison cigar, everything they tried to kill Castro hadn't worked. Maybe they were breeding a strain of mutant rabbits to attack Cuba, and one of them got loose and attacked the President of the United States. I don't know. Anything is possible in the modern world. But one thing is sure, Carter saw a UFO, and then he was attacked by a killer rabbit, just like King Arthur in the Monty Python film. So I say the surrealists have won. By the way, Plains is on the 32nd degree of latitude, and so is Dallas, where John Kennedy got shot. And if you add up the letters in Lee Harvey Oswald and the killer rabbit, they both add up to 15. And Lee Harvey Oswald in the Marine Corps had the nickname Ozzie Rabbit. Photographs were withheld in both cases, and neither killer rabbit was ever brought to trial. There's some kind of cover up there, I'm sure.
Conspiracy.
There are some people think I'm the head of the Illuminati. Roberto Calvi went out to the Blackfriars Bridge and climbed down over the side to a place that's very difficult to get to, even for a professional acrobat. And yet he was 62 years of age, and yet he somehow managed to climb down there. And then he filled his pockets with bricks and hanged himself, just so some idiots would think the Freemasons had done it to him. The head of the investigation in Scotland Yard was a Freemason and decided it was suicide. I don't know whether it was suicide or not. My attitude towards the Calvi execution, suicide, or whatever it was, is that it was either done by Freemasons or by people who are very, very eager to have us think it was done by Freemasons. Since he was hung where the rising tide would cover his body, Calvi's wife claims it was done by the Vatican. But, of course, she's a hysterical widow, and we shouldn't take her opinions too seriously, I suppose. Although it is curious that the publisher of Osservatore Politico in Italy, he sent Pope John Paul I a list of Freemasons who had infiltrated the Vatican, and the Pope was taken suddenly dead right after getting that and buried without an autopsy, which has led to a lot of morbid and paranoid speculation in some quarters. If you've read David Yalop's book, In God's Name, you know what I mean. But what happened to the publisher of Osservatore Politico doesn't require any speculation whatsoever. He was shot dead by machine gun on the streets of Rome. That's a very strange coincidence indeed. There's a difference between a scientific proof, a mathematical proof, a legal proof, and a merely plausible argument. Stephen Knight gives a plausible argument that the Freemasons did the Jack the Ripper murders. It's not a legal proof or a mathematical proof or a scientific proof. It's merely a plausible argument. There are thousands of plausible arguments around, and everybody who has a plausible argument who can acquire disciples is a pope right away. I don't know whether the Freemasons did the Jack the Ripper murders or not. It's an interesting speculation. Yes? Ronald Reagan's middle name is Wilson. And that brings us back to the rabbits again, doesn't it? Because Ronald Wilson Reagan, you got six letters in his first name, six letters in his middle name, six letters in his last name. You add it together, you get 666. If you look in the book of Revelations, you will find that the great beast 666 will be wounded in the head and will rise up later stronger than ever. And Reagan was wounded in the head and then had the greatest political victory in American history in terms of votes cast. And I think that's pretty good reason for also, if you read the book of Revelations carefully, you'll find a very clear description of Heseltine. So, but I won't tell you. You got to look, read through it all 22 chapters. And you'll find. Wow. That is so staggering. There are these 666s on these. There's a computer in Belgium that has the number 666. There's a computer in one of my science fiction novels that has the number 666 too. I just miss being 666. Anton doesn't have six letters in it, unfortunately.
The Illuminati was not set up to operate on Georgia. Usually, a conspirator enters into a conspiracy with the expectancy of achieving his objectives during his own lifetime. But that was not the case with the Illuminati. It was intended that their descendants would eventually achieve Adam Weishaupt was a Jesuit-trained professor of when he defected from Christianity. In 1770, the professional moneylender, the recently organized Alfred Rothschild, became Weishaupt to revive and modernize the old protocol of science, which from the outset was designed to destroy the natural process of civilization. Weishaupt completed his task on May the 1st, 1776. Now you know why. May the 1st is a great day. All communist nations. That was the day that Weishaupt completed his plan and officially organized the Illuminati and put the plan into execution.
There are some people think I'm the head of the Illuminati, and I never deny that either, because the Illuminati are supposed to control the international banking system, and the more people who believe I'm the head of the Illuminati and control the international, the better my credit rating gets. So I don't deny any of these charges. But for those of you who are not yet popes, you see, according to the Discordian eschatology, there are two major forces in the universe, the House of the Rising Hodge and the House of the Rising Podge. The House of the Rising Hodge is made up of all the popes in the universe. These are all of the people who accept their own infallibility and do not attempt anymore to evade their responsibilities or get off the hook and say, I don't know. These are people who know they're infallible, like the Ayatollah and the Catholic Pope and Ronald Reagan and Gaddafi and all the other infallible beings on the planet. And then there's the House of the Rising Podge, which is all the people who don't think they're infallible yet and are still being led around by their noses by the people who know they're infallible. So the universe is the chaos basically contains discord. You didn't realize you got to have discord before you can have chaos, did you? And the discord is made up of the House of the Rising Hodge and the House of the Rising Podge. The popes and the people who don't know they're popes yet. That's very similar to the Chinese philosophy about yin and yang, but it can be simplified even further. For those of you who have no head for metaphysics, you don't have to understand the Rising Hodge and the Rising Podge or yin and yang. Just think of it this way. The universe is made up of something and nothing. That's easy enough to understand. If you look at anything, look at the microphone here. You see something. What's all around it? Nothing, right? You look at me. I'm something, I hope. You look around. What's around me? Nothing. So no matter where you look, you see something on a background of nothing or something surrounded by nothing. So you don't have to get into the Hodge and the Podge and the Thesis and the Antithesis like Hegel or the Yin and the Yang like the I Ching. It's just a mixture of something and nothing. If you get to the pivot point between something and nothing, you are in a state of total slack, and then you can get something for nothing. But how do you get there? Well, this is the secret that all the popes understand. This is what Heseltine understands. Why? This is why he's the most powerful man in England today. You think he's been thrown out of his job? He's got no future. He's not in the government anymore. Just look at the newspapers. Who's getting the headlines every day? Heseltine, Heseltine, Heseltine. Oh, my snarling Heseltine. He's really... There's many kinds of power. If you can stay on the front page of the newspapers day after day, you've got power. That's how Charlie Manson got power. He was never elected to office anywhere, but he took over the imagination of the whole world, scared the hell out of everybody, destroyed the whole counterculture of the 60s just by keeping his image on the front page. And Heseltine is doing that every day. He's on the front page. And what is the secret of power? The secret of power is understanding that you are a pope. You don't have to wait for the Ayatollah or the guy in Rome or Ian Paisley or anybody else. All you've got to understand is that you are infallible, just as you are. That may not be clear, but let me put it to you mathematically. You all know, everybody here, you all know very clearly how dumb the average bloke is, right? Isn't that clear? Everybody knows that. Well, by definition, half of the bastards are even dumber than that. Now, if you understand that, you are an ordained pope. The card I gave you is valid, and you can go forth, make converts, get disciples. Rajneesh got 93 Rolls Royces in 10 years. You know what he did with them? Every time he got a new Rolls Royce, he took a picture of it and wrote on the back of it, "Fuck you," and mailed it to Krishnamurti. Krishnamurti. Krishnamurti only has one Rolls Royce. He's been in the guru business since 1910. I was at a lecture by him in San Francisco at the Masonic Auditorium. I always go to Masonic Auditoriums on every possible occasion. And everybody was so respectful. I never saw so much respect. My audiences are never so respectful. They laugh at me. They laughed at Einstein. They laughed at Dr. Frankenstein. They laughed at Edison. So I don't care if they laugh at me. But nobody laughed at Krishnamurti. Everybody was totally somber and serious and taking in every syllable and hoping to get darshan. And then he said, "Any questions?" And I did the most cowardly deed in my whole life. I did not shout out the question that I wanted to, which was, "Buggered any good bishops lately?" I think that would have been a Satori experience for the whole audience. But I didn't. I spent the rest of my life regretting that I didn't have the courage to do that. And that's why Krishnamurti only has one Rolls Royce and Rajneesh has 93. Rajneesh would have shouted, "Buggered any good bishops lately?" Rajneesh started out by telling his disciples, "You've got to wear orange." And they all did it. And Rajneesh contemplated this for about 7 years. And then he said, "You've all got to wear purple instead of orange." So they all changed their costumes to purple. And when he saw that, he said, "Go out and get me 93 Rolls Royces. I don't care how long it takes." And they got him 93 Rolls Royces. So Rajneesh understood the secret of power. The secret of power. I told it to you 10 times tonight, but I don't know if you've gotten it yet. I'll put it in even simpler terms. A disciple is an asshole looking for a human being to attach itself to. Other infallible folks in the audience, I hope.